Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to tonight's show of Strange Magic After Midnight with myself, Victoria Frost, and my co-host, Incoherent Dust, better known as Mika. This show is brought to you by the Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a member of the website or the group to call in and read a poem of your own. However, if you like poetry, we highly recommend it. We host shows every night of the week on a variety of topics and themes to ensure that there's something for everyone to enjoy. And if you already know and love the shows and want to support us, be sure to check out our anthologies on Amazon. You get an awesome selection of poetry as well as help keep our shows running. Tonight, we have an interesting prompt. a while back, in I think it was like the 1960s, 1970s, they discovered a tomb while they were getting ready to, I think they were getting ready to build a building of some kind over in, I think it was China. And as they were excavating, they found the tomb of basically someone who was high up. It took decades for them to excavate this tomb. And as they were doing so, they found the world's most well-preserved mummy. They think that she was actually dipped in some type of acid to prevent her from decaying. But when they found her, they could move her muscles. She still had her hair and her eyelashes. They actually found blood in her veins. And so it's one of those things where it's fantastic. And I think the greatest mystery in this is that she's buried with her husband and her son. She definitely should not have lived as long as she did because of all her medical ailments that we know of, because she's so well preserved. And yet both of those two men are not in good shape. They were decayed. They were basically what you would expect a 2,200-year-old mummy to be. And yet Lady Day was so well preserved. And so we don't have many poems tonight, so it will probably not be the longest show ever. But I'm excited to get into it. And Mika, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great, Victoria. I loved your choice of prompt this week. I thought it was really awesome, and I'm excited for all the poetry we have on this topic.
Absolutely. We've got some pretty awesome stuff. And by chance, do we have anyone calling in just yet?
Yes, we do, if I can get off the mute button. We do. We have, I believe we have Mark. Mark, is that you?
Yeah, that's me. I'm here, guys.
Welcome. Hey, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Enjoyed listening to the song. I haven't, Strange Magic, I haven't heard that in, wow, I don't know. No, we were holding.
You can thank Mika for that one. She picked it. She has such great taste in music.
Yeah, it was great. But what was it? It was a cover, right? Who was it? It wasn't the...
it was not what was a cover. Actually, it was Electric Light Orchestra.
It was them. All right. Yeah, I was wondering. It sounds. I haven't heard it in so long. It sounded on a little different somehow, but it was great. They were all such a great group. I liked them. Glad to hear them
Me
again.
Too. Absolutely. Well, it's good to have you on here, Mark. I'm really glad you're here. And do you mind starting out the show?
Oh, with mine? Sure.
Okay, I'm going to post it up right now. All right. That poem is up, and give it a read when you're ready.
All right. With Lady Di. I just want my love to live. Don't care if I myself survive, since I'm depressed. It's just the staring and darkness always is quite wearing. I say to myself, no need to care, because it's not going anywhere. Mortality is what we have, with no exit or reprieve. It will end shortly anyway. So for the moment, be okay. If we could avoid death, in a way, it's conceivable, I could say. Go, dear, try it out and see. Maybe you'll like immortality. You always like to leave the room, wander among the world and bloom. For me, it's fine, the sheltering gloom, with Lady Di in her tomb. End of poem.
Oh, this is such a fantastic, fantastic poem. And I'm so glad you wrote for it. And I know in passing, you were like, it might be depressing. I don't think it is. I have goosebumps because there is this meandering. And when you understand her history, she outlived her husband and her son. I think she had like diabetes and scoliosis and a lot of other stuff. And so here you have someone who had a lot of physical ailments whose life would not have been really all that great. Health-wise, she would have struggled. And yet the two people she loves most, her husband and her son, have passed, departed before her. And so to me, this really feels kind of like those thoughts when those that you love are no longer there, that you have to learn how to continue on without them, waiting for your time to get to join them. It's soft, it's gentle, it has an appreciation for life, and at the same time, it has a tone of ready to be reunited. It's a simple piece, but it's just really, truly well done, Mark. Thank you so much for sharing this. And Nico, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it, Mark. I think it's cool because you speak to the prompt, and I like the iambic pentameter. I envy you for having the wherewithal to even write with an iambic pentameter, because I just can't. But also, the way you approached the prompt was not literal. It wasn't literally talking about Lady Day. It wasn't a description of her. This is very relevant to life and to, oftentimes the futility that you feel. Especially this quote, mortality is what we have with no exit or reprieve. It will end shortly anyway, so for the moment, be okay. I love those words. I think it's cool that it's kind of a mantra that isn't offering false hope. There is no exit or reprieve. All of us are going to die someday, so for the moment, be okay. I really like that. And I like that at the end, the person who's chasing after immortality, who's chasing after the unattainable, you're like, that's fine. You do what you want to do, but I'm fine in the sheltering gloom. And you bring it back to that, to the prompt in that way. It was really cool.
Lovely comments. Thanks.
That was a fantastic comment, Mika. And I love that you pointed out that everything will be okay. Because so often in life, we have those moments where we get caught up in our plight. Like today was a struggle. A million phone calls from clients who are freaking out because tomorrow is D-Day. It was extended, but it wasn't really extended for my clients. And so it's one of those things where it's like we can so easily be distracted by all the bad things in life, and it's okay to be upset about them. It's okay to take a moment and say, this sucks, but we always have to pull ourselves out of it because it's not the end of the world. So I do love that you pointed that out, because that too really particularly resonated with me and my own plight. So thank you, Mark, and thank you, Mika, for your amazing poem and your amazing comments. All right, Mika, where are we off to next?
Well, next I have posted a poem by Hakan Seven. And I will go ahead and give this a read. This is called Freedom. Like sleeping in the shade of a tree, free and gentle like the branches of a great tree, proud and majestic as if breathing with your leaves, like sometimes afraid of a child's shadow. Is it cute? Freedom means water bread, as much as sleeping in your shadow, on the wing of every bird that wakes up one morning and flies into the sky. It means reaching for free and proud stars. Our pale shadows, and maybe the footsteps of our veiled selves covered in bodies, are left alone in this earth. Each of us in this realm that is simply silent. Our self that is hidden like a written signature in a picture. End poem.
Such an awesome comment, or an awesome read, Mika, I'm sorry, and a beautiful comment by Hawkins 7. I think what I really appreciate about this is that it's not the kind of poem that I would have expected to come from a prompt like this, and yet at the same time, to me, it fits so well. This idea that freedom does not come because of our lot in life, because of how life has handed us our deeds, but that it's this beautiful miracle of happenstance. I mean, if you think about it, you know, to have a baby, you have like a woman typically has about 7 days in which she's fertile, which means that the egg that got fertilized that became me, you, Mark, Phil, every single one of us had to be that one egg. No other egg, no other swimmer could have made that person. And what a miracle that is. And so I feel that in this. I feel the miracle that is life, that is freedom, that is the opportunity that we have because we are here. And I see how Lady Day or Dai, I think that's how Mark pronounced it, which is probably the right pronunciation. I'm probably wrong. Genuinely, I'm probably wrong. You know, she is a miracle. You shouldn't have a 2,200-year-old mummy that looks that good, that is that well preserved, and yet we have it. And so I appreciate this in that it is an acknowledgement of how life and moments and whatnot, while they always feel small, they're truly a miracle that is us that gets to experience that. It's a really beautiful piece. And Mark, what did you think?
Yeah, it was a lovely piece, and I enjoyed your comment on it. Just what you said about you know, life and the shared opportunity we have participating in life. This poem captures that so well. And powerfully and gently too, like free and gentle, like the branches of a great tree. We're all participatory of, you know, ourselves sitting here in our, you know, well, mortal condition, and Lady Di in the tomb, and, you know, the world at large, like part of a network, a living kind of magical, strong network, the branches of a great tree. And the references and imagery are, you know, very, you know, beautiful. The freedom means water, bread, as much as sleeping in your shadow. That brings back, you know, Lady Di in her tomb in this preserved state that is participatory in life. And that's what the poem is about. It's just a very grave and beautiful and spiritual celebration of life itself, how we're all in this world, we're all involved in the whole chain of life. It's just a lovely meditation on that, with wonderful images and languages, our pale shadow and maybe the footsteps of our veiled self, covered in bodies that are left alone in this earth. And then the concluding line, our self that is hidden like a written signature in a picture. We're all here, Lady Di is that self that's somewhere in the watermark of a picture or of life in general. And ourselves sitting right here, that's the kind of union among us all. It's just a lovely meditation. Great poem.
That was an outstanding comment, Mark. I feel a little bad asking Mika what she said now, what she thinks now, because I don't know if we can top that one, Mika. That was amazing.
It was such a good comment. Oh, I hate to follow Mark now. There's like a list of poets that's slowly growing that I don't want to follow with comments. But first, I want to let you know that we have Pam joining us. Hey, Pam. So good to have you here.
Hey, Mika. Hey, Victoria. Hi, Mark. Good to hear you all.
Good to have you here.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. I really liked your comment, Mark, especially talking about the meditative quality of this person's writing. I totally agree with you on that. And you quoted the last stanza, which is kind of what I was going to go to as well. I just wanted to say that I loved I love that last stanza the most because I got so much meaning from it. Our pale shadows and maybe the footsteps of our veiled selves covered in bodies are left alone in this earth. I like that because I almost feel like it's talking about the way that history repeats itself and the way that all those that came before us are the determinations of who we are genetically and also how we act. You know, every action throughout history has its reaction. It's like the butterfly effect being put into words. Our pale shadows and maybe the footsteps of our veiled selves covered in bodies are left alone in this earth. Like every person who's ever lived and died has affected who we are and what the earth is, what society is, what everything is that's going on. And I felt like it was really understated to pull in all the bodies covering the veiled self. And yet it speaks to something so vast that our veiled selves are covered in bodies, everyone, literally everyone who's ever lived before. I thought it was a really cosmic piece. It was really cool to read.
Speaker saying she doesn't want to go after people, and then she pulls that one out of her pocket. I love that. That was truly a phenomenal comment, because I never even thought about it, about how history will repeat itself, because it does. We see it in fashion. We see it in history. There's only so many stories that can be told, and yet we as humans keep returning to some of the worst ones. So that was just truly an amazing comment, Mika. Thank you. And Pam, did you get a chance to read this?
What's that? I'm sorry.
Did you get a chance to read this poem or hear this poem?
Yes, I did briefly. I mean, I really didn't get to go into depth for it, so I'm just going to go ahead and skip commenting.
Said, Mika, where are we off to?
Well, next up, I was going to put up Pam's poem. If you wouldn't mind giving that a read for us, Pam.
Oh, absolutely. I can do that. So I wrote this for another contest. It was inspired by a poem by Zinn, or however you pronounce the classic poet's name. But I made it, I tried to make it work with your prompt. So this is winding rivers beneath the gaze of the sun, and it goes like this. I'm pouring my heart into words, the delicate touch of ink upon pulp hemp, crushed and dried beneath the gaze of the sun. I am a woman who bears the weight of responsibility, slender shoulders pulled back, taunt and aching. Pride is a lonely burden. I adore my lover. To him, my body is a song to be played, and my soul is to be nourished with laughter and wisdom. My hands are always busy, even when they rest in my lap like napping kittens. They are communicating with the gods. I am telling them of my sorrows. I am telling them. I look forward to the afterlife when I shall soar on glorious wings. I'm not drunk. I wish I was drunk. I wish my lips were drenched in opium and wine. Some night I giggle with pleasure at my ridiculous thoughts. Other nights I lay still and listen to my blood, winding red plum rivers coursing through my veins. My mind drinks deeply from the whispers of my body. I fervently hope that beyond death, I will know this wet boat of life. End poem.
Oh, Pam, this is stunning. And of course you write this today for the National Poetry Month, because Pam, and you're amazing. Mika, I'm going to put you on the spot and let you start off commenting on this one.
Oh, my fucking God, Pam. I don't know where to start with this. How do I comment? You know what it is? It's just like today is the day that I needed to read this poem. I don't know what it is, but... I am a woman who bears the responsibility, slender shoulders pulled back, taut and aching. Pride is a lonely burden. I don't know. I think you're fucking singing to my soul with those words. And when you go into the wishing you were drunk, wishing your lips were drenched in opium and wine, wishing for pleasure, and then just for that taste, you know, when you talk about the end, you know, you wish to escape the burdens that you carry, even though you would never, never give them up. But sometimes you wonder what it would be like to know this wet ode of life. And, oh, my God, you're fucking wording in. I will know this wet ode of life. just the weight of what you carry causes you to miss out on what you know is the full experience. And even though you would not give it up and it has its own rewards, sometimes you wonder what it would be like to feel truly free, to feel truly disconnected from all that depends on you. It was really
like
beautiful,
that.
Pam.
Thank you.
That was a really beautiful comment, Mika. And Mark, what were your thoughts?
I have a question first. Pam, you said you wrote this for some other contest?
Yes.
Pretty, wow, because, you know, it's pretty ideal for this contest. I mean, the opening lines, the delicate ink of, a touch of ink upon pulped hemp, crushed and dried beneath the gaze of the sun. You know, it's almost like, you know, I was thinking, honestly, that, you know, we're like back in ancient Egypt there, you know, with the under the sun. It's like this poem is talking about the past and present to me, things that the condition that exists in the past and how we're connected in the, because this is what Lady Di went through. The pulped hemp brings it back to me, and the sun, you know, in the desert and the river there, and these are all her in her tomb with the end of her life. I just a woman who went through all these things. What she did to maintain her life and. I honestly read that all into it. Just our all who we are as people in the present, but connected to somebody like her in the past. Just at the lying there in this condition, she right beside her lover, her body right beside her lover, this is kind of the human condition. You're describing. Things that the poet experienced and turned into the poem, but it's also the human condition to me, and just beautiful poetry. The things we endure, the things we do, the things we create, and things we enjoy, and I love somehow it all brought that back to me. The people who have always lived and live now. The beautiful poetry evoking all that, and the kind of comic, but just very reflective. I am not drunk. I wish I was drunk. I wish my lips were drenched in opium and wine. Some nights I giggle with pleasure at my ridiculous thoughts. Other nights I lay still and listen to my blood. I mean, so that brought me back Lady Di with her blood preserved in her veins. Having had that kind of pleasure and just lying there, it's almost like she's lying there listening to the whispers of her own body. And, at present beyond death. But she still is preserved, you know, in the wet ode of life. It's kind of amazing how you kind of just described your own condition and how it evokes, her condition and the general conditions. They're really beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, well, because the classic poet I wrote to was from ancient China.
I was on mute. That was a fantastic comment, Mark. I think what really sticks out to me in this is that while there's a lot of really beautiful imagery, there's little nuances to it that suggest that while there is beauty in life, there is also pain. Can you guys hear me? It's like awfully quiet.
Oh, I can hear you.
Oh, good. I got very scared. Okay, so while there is beauty in life, there is often pain. There are moments of self-doubt. There are moments where we cannot help but wish to not think about life and how life is. So for example, we have that idea, you know, I am a woman who bears the weight of responsibility, slender shoulders pulled back, taunt and aching. Pride is a lonely burden. And it goes from there. And that I adore my lover to him. My body is a song to be played and my soul is to be nourished with laughter and wisdom. But what about to her? There's to me a hinting of a lack of self-worth there, a recognition that her lover appreciates her. But how long does that last when someone does not think themselves worthy of such? My hands are always busy, even when they rest in my lap, napping like napping kittens, they are communicating with the gods. I too feel there that while yes, that can be an act of prayer, it can also be an act of pleading. I remember I'm a Christian, and yet I'm terrible with praying to my God because I don't feel like he hears me and I don't feel like he answers me. In my heart of hearts, I believe he is there, but I do not feel that he hears me. And so why pray if I am so unimportant, important and yet so unimportant? There are others far more important than me. And I remember this year on my birthday, the one thing that I asked was that he did not let my nephew, because he's my nephew, not biologically, but by relationally, but my best friend. All I wanted was for him not to die on my birthday, the one day of the year. One thing. How hard is it for an almighty God to prevent a tiny little baby from dying on my birthday? And yet, 30 minutes into it, my nephew died. Seems cruel. After how much I pleaded with him for that one small request. And so she pours out her sorrows. She looks forward to not being in this life because the burden has been too much. Even with a lover who appreciates her, there's a plea. She would rather be drunk with wine and opium than have to continue along this course that only seems full of burdens and pain. And so she cannot help but think of these red plum rivers coursing in her veins, pleading to run more freely. Because if this is life, then hopefully death will be better. It leaves me with goosebumps. Is such a deeply painful rite that acknowledges that life is not always grand. Sometimes it's just really fucking hard. Just amazing, right, Pam?
Thank you, Victoria.
Beautiful comment, Victoria. Okay, next up we have a poem by Urowitz. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We had a poem by Iona Cosma. Let me repost it real quick. I realize it got buried. And Victoria, do you want to give this poem a read for us?
Absolutely. All right. Iona Cosma, The Fragrant Tomb. When Xin Zui woke from her age-old slumber, she noticed her dress had caught a bit of dust, a little patina of green luster as though she'd crossed the marshes of the starring dead. She watched her husband apathetically and calmly. She'd never loved him, or so she thought. At last released from the bonds of marriage, she left her jade ring behind in the tomb. She began to roam the cities surrounded by stardust, a few moonlit tabernacles where she wedded strangers, the tents of warriors who played with bowls in the cloister of Fulton's Odalisque. She felt appeased at last and washed her ivory complexion in a brass mirror. Her raven black hair had become purple, like night sky lit by the chandeliers from an age where she longed to become a nascent star. Her trail behind an inexplicable fragrance that clad the city walls in dreams of roses and ivy. She never felt, never left the scent, but it is rumored they found her a perfume bottle in her hand. End poem. Oh, that was stunning. And Pam, would you mind starting comments?
I'd be happy to. Well, first of all, this was definitely a well-deserved front page pick. Absolutely beautiful. I like the four-line stanzas that have a really nice meter to them. It seems like even though they're not rhyming, they flow beautifully. I like the way that this has a mythological element of somebody waking from the dead, but it seems to go like deeper than that. It's not just about the whole shock value of somebody, you know, waking up from the dead, but rather about somebody who, you know, realizes things they've missed and missed out on, you know, the realizing that, you know, that said she never loved him, or so she thought, at least released from the bonds of marriage, she left her jade ring behind in the tomb. And then she felt at peace at last and watched her heavy eyes, her ivory complexion, a brass mirror, her raven hair had become purple like night. I like that imagery, and I like the idea of somebody wandering around and a spirit, and, you know, realizing all these different pleasures and emotions in life that they had missed. And it's told in such a way that there's really not a heavy hand at the emotion, and yet because of every little thing she picks up, the perfume bottle, the fact that she's looking at the lights, at the stars, and even just watching her husband, conveys a sense of emotion within the actions of the character. So, an excellent writing, very well done.
Beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Mika, what did you think?
Just love the kind of fairy tale, folktale aspect of it. It's really cool to read something that seems like it's taken out of what is the freaking book I'm thinking of? Damn it. It has Aladdin in it.
Arabian Nights? Or the...
Yes, Arabian Nights.
Thousand Tales.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
A Thousand Tales of Sherazad. Yes. That's what I meant. It really, especially with the ending, which I thought was really beautifully done. Her trails left behind an inexplicable fragrance that clad the city walls in dreams of roses and ivy. It's just something so fairy tale-esque about this poem. It's really, really cool. And it's not, it doesn't follow the typical tropes of a fairy tale. It's not that the story itself, follows those tropes. It's just that the way that it's written is so fantastical. It almost is blurred in a veil of mist. I really liked it.
That was an amazing comment. I too felt that this is very kind of mythological, almost as if it should be some sort of cultural lore, like the first vampire, but she's not malevolent. She's just enjoying her freedom for the first time. And we get to see that change, that growth from someone who has to fall quietly behind her husband and her son to someone who can actually go out and marry people and be free to do as she wishes. And that her presence left almost reminds me of Mother Mary. They say that when the Virgin Mother is near, that there's that scent of roses. And I'm not Catholic, but that's part of the Catholic Christian lore. And so this also too reminds me of catching that fragrance, that idea that it could be tied to something greater than ourselves. And in this instance, it is her learning to be greater than the lot she was assigned, even if it was a lot that was better than most. That was just a stunning comment, Mika. And Mark, what did you think? Did we lose me?
Oh, he was here just a second. No. Okay, he's back. It shows him up twice, so it showed that he was still on the call, and now it shows him calling back. Weird.
Yeah, no, I'm here. I'm here. So, yeah, I was starting to comment. I really love this poem. It was so beautiful. The incredible image. I love the way she picked up on this poem. Is very there with the situation described by the prompt. You know, in this kind of magical chamber. Lady Di lying there by her husband. We all think of, you know, the pyramids and the having, you know, deep in darkness and stone walls and all that, but also treasure and kind of a mystical, magical environment is the image of, you know, like Nefertiti. And I saw that in the Lady Di prompt, and this poem is right there in the middle of that kind of strangeness and mystery, and just the way it's handled. She's lying by her husband, and it's almost like a spirit, you know, an awakening, like a ghost rising out of the body, lying there in the darkness, and seeing her husband, and then it's part of that whole magical world of the ancient Egyptians, you know, their hieroglyphs, their mythologies about journeys to the gods, because they were really into that. They thought the afterlife was a journey and this magical boat, and that's why they had all those objects in the pyramid. And this is like playing with that idea, that situation. And what's incredible is the imagery. Boy, look at that. They watched her ivory complexion in a brass mirror. Her raven hair had become purple like the night skies lit by the chandelier. That's just really, really beautiful. Just a very magical poem.
That was a phenomenal comment, Mark. I do have to tease you, though, because you mentioned that we think of Egyptians and we think of their tombs as, you know, the pyramids and the tombs is magical. But I've apparently watched The Mummy too many times because I think of them and I just think of curses, which is technically magic, but not the kind I want to mess with. So.
That was funny.
All right, Mika, where are we off to next?
All right. Well, next up we have a poem by Theo Onik, and I believe we have a SoundCloud for this. So I will press play on that once I get this posted on the board. All right.
Delicate letters in the wind. Leaves of sadness fall down with the petals of pollen's walls. Delicate flowers, last letters surrendering to the wind. Under the starry clear sky, dark pouring called stray gulls. Down to the shells they lost for the frozen in time flickering vines. A universe's strings willing to keep a balance untouched in memories from which more gazes offer a glance through blown feather tails trickling stardust in all watched. Look inside you. What can you see? Look and dance. Dance the dance of eternity lost inside you, all the universe with its stars, its moons, its glorious planets reminding us of losses and victories. Look inside you. Where are your words? In which galaxy your heart and soul accepted? Where your rescuing gale, flower petals, falling like letters from the tree of life, delicate dwarves sending their elegant last fairy tale to chimes that charm your spirit, mending heart to honor your strife.
Oh, Oh, that was a phenomenal performance by Theo Onik. I swear she's got to do something professionally where she's enacting or something, performing, because the way that she just reads her own work, it really feels like it's a production, but in the good kind of way. It just wraps you up in it. This poem to me is striking because it starts off reminding me that we're made of the same elements that they find in the earth and in the stars that we have access to. And so there's this idea that we're all made up of these elements, which is just a little bit of stardust, that the iris, and maybe that's a good prompt, that the iris is almost like looking at galaxies when you magnify it. And so this idea that we have these universes within us, but at the same time, to me, it also speaks of trying to find ourselves, trying to understand our place in this world, at where are we? Who are we? Are we floating through the galaxy of our heart? Or are we lost in the woods of our soul? Do we get to enjoy the way that the flower petals fall, like letters from the tree dictating our life, or is it more like the strings of fate getting closer to being cut? To me, it feels really philosophical, this idea of journey and discovery, of understanding our fit and our place and our path and our rhythm in life, which can change on the day and the weather. It's just stunning. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. I really feel like when you give the instructions in your contest to take the prompt and make it your own, that Theo always does, she does a superb job of doing that. You know, she captures the tone of that kind of spirituality of life and death, but that's offered up in the idea of coming across a tomb, but with language and imagery that's all her own. And I have to agree that she has just a very beautiful and professional reading voice. I like how the opening stanza with the leaves of sadness fall down with the petals of pollen walls. It makes you think about how oftentimes the weather, the conditions of the atmosphere affect our mood. And sometimes it even seems as if the mood came first and they were created by the energy that we put out. I also like the universe strings willing to keep a balance untouched in memory. But, you know, I think it really is, there's something about the universe that things balance out and dance this dance of eternity. It's a powerful line. And, I mean, this is just amazing all the way through. And I do like how she starts to question, look inside you. Where are our woods? Where your rescuing gale? And I like that she says, you know, look inside yourself and where is your rescuing gale? Because it's, you know, the whole idea of nobody else is going to rescue you. Whatever it is that you're going through in life, yeah, other people can help you out, but you have to choose to move forward on your own. At least that's kind of the thoughts I've had, and just absolutely beautiful and very well done.
Oh, I love that idea, Pam, because it's true. Nobody is going to help us in life. You can offer people help, and they will often take more. I just had a friend today. And I get it, you know, life is hard and we're all in different places, but she's traveling up from Arizona for a friend's wedding, and she was talking, and she goes, I really want to see you when I'm up there. And I was like, that would be awesome. And I was like, you know, are you bringing your son? And she goes, no, it's too expensive. And I was like, yeah, traveling with kids could be really, you know, is really expensive. And she goes, yeah, it's like $200. And I was like, that's a lot. And she goes, yeah, if only I could have, you know, to get $200. And I was just like, don't roundabout ask me for money. But this is, you know, there are people that when you give them a little bit, they will continue to come to you, not because you are actually helping them and they appreciate it, but because they start to just take from you. And so I do really appreciate that you said that, because it sometimes sucks to realize that there's not a lot of people that you can really rely on, and that those that are around are not always there for your benefit. It's a beautiful comment, Pam. And Mika, what did you think?
I loved both of you guys' comments. The only thing that I was really going to call out, I think it was a beautiful poem and a beautiful read, as you guys said, but I like the juxtaposition of the treatment of the petals on and comparing them to paper. Leaves of sadness fall down with petals of pollen's walls. Delicate flower, last letter surrendering to the winds. That really seems like the end of something. The last letter surrendering to the winds. Petals dropping off of a wilting flower. And then in a more cosmically hopeful ending, it becomes flower petals falling like letters from the tree of life. Delicate walls sending their elegant last fairy tale to chimes that charm your spirit, mending heart to honor your stripes. This is really cool because in the first part, it's like an elegy, and the last moments or words that you have become the last letters surrendering to the winds. But in the ending, it's like the beginning. It's like the beginning of a new chapter, a new leaf turned over. We can talk about falling like letters from the tree of life. I really like that. Yeah, that's what I had to say.
I love that thought, Mika. The idea of the letters being the end in the tree of life. Oh, that was funny. Thank you. And Mark, what did you think?
It's just lovely. I love her, Theo's poetry. Just the sense of a cosmic dance, the dance of eternity, and just picking up on things that you guys have already really said already, but just the, this prompt is a poem about life and death, miraculous preservation, and, you know, but still the in the tomb, and this is like the dance of eternity that includes all of that, life and death, and I love that phrase. She gave the feeling, starting with the pollen falling, which is the seed, and I love the first stanza, this mixture of sadness and life and death with the renewal already there in the pollen's wall, last letters surrendering to the wind, all of that kind of captures the human condition and us as part of a universe's strings, willing to keep a balance untouched. And then the way it starts slowly to kind of move into the dance of an eternity after this beginning of renewal in the first stanza, it starts the dance of a, spirit within the universe. And it's beautifully said. And it kind of expands throughout the universe. It's consoling poem, really. In which galaxy is your heart and soul accepted? I just get the feeling of the spirit kind of spreading out through the stars and kind of blending in to the entire universe. It's just kind of a stunning vision, very lovely.
I love that. I love how you kind of drew that picture almost like a tree growing its branches out. That was a fantastic comment, Mark. Thank you. All right, and Mika, where are we off to next?
Okay, well, next up we have a poem by Mamia called Of Lady Day. And this we have a SoundCloud for. I'm so glad to hear her perform this.
So let me press play on that.
Of Lady Di, deep in the tomb on Mount Dewey Hill, lay beautiful Xin Shui, she who never faded. Supple of skin, lithe of limbs, she appeared only to sleep for 2,000 years. But little did anyone know that the late Di was nothing more than an Uruguay with an insatiable hunger. And so the story went that after her death and her burial, the horror all started. Jiangxi went rampant in old Changsha, stealing qi from the citizenry to give to their lady. It was either happenstance or just sheer karma that a wandering He Shan came to the beleaguered kingdom. For 5 days and 5 nights, he recited the Yulan Ten Sutra, battling qi against qi until the lady's power gave in. Yet now, she is out of the tomb, free again to let loose her horrid Jiangxi, to be youthful and beautiful once again.
I had myself on mute yet again. This was such a stunning write, and I'm so glad that Mamya got to call in, because I truthfully don't think any of us could have done it justice. It's always wonderful to get to hear poets read their work in their own voice, because there's just an inflection and an honesty and a spirit that comes with it that we just don't normally get. So thank you for that, Mamya. And Mark, would you mind starting us off on comments on this one?
Yeah, it was a very different take on the prompt. Beautiful. The way she related, it was to kind of a very lovely and very spiritual vampire story or something analogous. In a context of the figure arising from the death with an insatiable hunger. Mamiya took the poem and the idea and played with it in a way and drew a story from it, imagining what might happen if the preservation, you know, what's the most possible, if we were just to go by what we, you know, all the books we've read, like Dracula and all those things, there's something about Lady Di's condition that's a bit like that, the fact that she's preserved. And Mamiya picked up on that idea and said, hey, and then she spun it into kind of this tale, like somebody, some Dracula-like figure sitting in the pyramid, preserved among the old, the dusty mummies, and just kind of lying there and rising, you know, and wreaking horror among the citizen, you know, stealing qi from the citizenry to get to their lady. Somebody showing up, you know, the hermit, or wandering figure, religious figure showing up to battle against it. It was kind of a lovely spin on it, turning it into a vampire story. I kept saying that prompt from the contest tomorrow, I think one of Pam's contests, the two picture prompt has, the second picture has this image of a female figure with brightly glowing eyes, and it reminded me of that. She arriving from her tomb, a vampire-like figure. It's just a lovely story, very, very imaginative, just lovely.
So I love that you bring that up, because I agree. The fact that Lady Di look like she actually had died so long ago. There is that idea of a vampire. And it reminds me of the Victorian era, where they would place cages over the coffins because they were afraid of the vampires rising from the dead. And there were actual stories where families, you know, I forget the exact name, but there's one that's pretty famous. And it's that a daughter died, and then one of the sons became sick, and they ended up digging up her grave. Long story short, they ended up digging up the grave of the girl that died, and she still looked completely normal. One of the other things that they did is that if they couldn't get a steel cage to go over the grave, because you can imagine that's probably expensive, they would actually bury people face down, because they believed that if someone woke up from the dead, as a vampire, they would dig up or whatever direction they are facing. So they would bury people face down in some instances so that they would dig down into the earth so they could not go to the surface and wreak havoc. And so this too reminded me of that. And your comment reminds me of that, that there's always been this pervasive fear that the dead will not stay dead. We see it with zombies. We see it with vampires. We see it with ghouls. Just for whatever reason, these people die and they do not stay how they are supposed to. And often it's not to come back for the benevolence and the good of man. And so I love that Mamiya took this prompt and turned it into this tale of a vampire that finally was laid to rest after 5 long days of this ritual. And yet in our unknowing desire to uproot the past, we've probably undone all of this work. And so here she is back to regain her youth. And what does that mean for us now? Truly, truly stunning piece. And Pam, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this. This was a perfect way for Mamiya to take this prompt because she's such a good storyteller. And I like, okay, I'm still on, right?
Yes, you're still here. I
yes,
can hear
you.
You're good.
I like that she goes with, that she goes with the Chinese hopping vampire, that the hungry ghost. Like, she reminds us that for all the differences in various cultures, there are similarities, especially within our storytelling. We all have our version of a hungry ghost. We all have our version of a vampire, because there's something just very intriguing and almost, even though it's dark, there's almost something very hopeful-like in the idea of being able to raise from the dead and have the type of powers that a vampire has. This is wonderful storytelling, as I mentioned. I like how she went with this angle. I like it's very dark and haunting and beautifully written and very well done.
That was a wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you so much. And Mika, what did you think?
Oh, man. I don't want to go last on this poem because you guys' comments were so good. Great job, you guys. I think this is so true to Mamiya's style. What I love about Mamiya, we share a love of certain authors like Neil Gaiman, and she never fails to deliver on the mythology aspect of her rights. And I'm really glad she chose to enter this contest and write for this prompt, because I think her approach in weaving in sort of mythology with the prompt is just so refreshing and so cool. And it's something I never get tired of reading from her. I like that she brought in this Chinese hopping vampire and created a backstory for why she is so perfect, why she is so lifelike. She lends herself well to horror as well, because it's not scary, but it's just really, it's got that perfect creepy atmosphere to the whole right. I really loved it.
I love that comment. And you're right. She doesn't write works that are necessarily scary, but they're haunting. They stick with you. They make you question the shadows in the dark, not because you see something in there, but because there could be at any time, and we never quite know. That's the feeling I always feel I'm left with when I read her work. And Mika, where are we off to next?
Okay, next up I have a poem by
Urowitz. And Victoria, would you read that for us?
Absolutely. This is Urowitz in hiding, hidden at home in fear of mocking, hiding behind doors of wood, double locked for safety of outside world. Curiosity is only for a cat. End poem. I guess I should probably leave comments and not just like sit here like a dodo.
Oh my God.
Sorry. I'm like sitting here and I was like, why is no one talking? That was fantastic. And I was like, oh wait, that's my job. Oh, Mika, why don't you start?
Oh, sure will. I like this. I like that there's a little bit of humor in the end. Curiosity is only for a cat. I think that's awesome. And also, I don't know, just in a brevity like this to talk about agoraphobia, I feel like they're talking about, is kind of cool. It has relation to the prompt, but in such a quirky way. I just like this person's style.
Oh, I absolutely would agree. And I love the idea. Curiosity is, you know, curiosity is what killed the cat. And so it kind of hints very much to me like what Namya does, that idea, that little idea in the back of your head that sometimes it's better to stay home and lock your doors and not go digging through the pyramids, the cursed pyramids in the dark, all because of what? Our own pride to make a name for ourselves. What's that if we all end up dead? So let's leave curiosity to the cat. It's kind of, it almost reads a satire to me, and yet it fits so perfectly well with this prompt. It was clever. I liked it. And Pam, what did you think?
I really liked this. I find it, I did like how there was that bit of humor at the ending. A wonderful brevity that is a bit epic in tone. It kind of brings to me the idea of, like, say, I don't know, it just has a feel of a V.C. Andrews novel. Do you remember those? Like, I think she had written only the first two series or first few books, and the rest were taken over and written by, like, her family. But there's kind of got that idea of, I picture, you know, like a stern mother, figure, hiding her family behind these locked doors, double locking them because she's convinced her children that the outside world is evil and that we need to hide from it. Of course, obviously, it never mentions that, but that's what my imagination puts in the spaces between the words. The whole idea of trying to protect your children from what you perceive as evil, when really the evil is just there within us all, and just a really thought-provoking brevity and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam. And I agree. I think the real strength in this poem is that it does leave us the bandwidth to fill in those gaps. And while it kind of leaves us with that idea, it still lets us create that story. So that was a phenomenal comment. Thank you. And Mark, what did you think?
Yeah, I think Pam really described it well, that feeling of enclosure and, you know, refuge for life, because that's part of what the pyramids are about. They were built to keep out invasion, right? You know, they had all, they're these big structures, and it was hard to find the mummies. People had to dig to find them, and they were there for safety and security of the mortal body, because the Egyptians felt the same way as what Pam described, our own condition of wanting security. They wanted it for the afterlife too. And this poem, you know, in a very nicely concise way, captures that whole feeling of being in that, you know, kind of fortress like a pyramid deep under the earth, trying to be secure And it was a lovely ending. A cat is a very Egyptian figure. They use the cat image a lot, and it's just kind of fun the way it was brought in. Curiosity is only for a cat. You know, you get this picture of deep hiding, deep refuge, and it's an interesting take on the prompt. Kind of a lovely look, brevity.
I actually really love that comment, Mark, because I didn't even think to correlate the Egyptian cat with this poem, just, you know, that old phrase, curiosity kills the cat. And yet it is so fitting because it was such a poignant creature, you know, and in many cultures is believed to be a creature that can walk between both life and death. And so to have that here, dealing with a mummy that seems to toe the line between life and death, is really quite genius. So fantastic perspective on that. Thank you for sharing that. And Mika, where are we off to next?
Well, we don't have any more poems for the show. I just posted a poem of mine that doesn't really fit the poem. It's kind of a loose fit. And I guess that's kind of where we're at tonight.
Please do. Real quick note, Rob did email me, PM, Rob Cohen, did PM me a poem, so I did post it in there. So we can take that one right after yours, and then Mark does have a poem for us to read real quick, so we can finish the show off with Mark.
Okay, sounds good. I feel bad because theirs are probably more on topic than mine. But I'll go ahead and read this. I haven't written anything new, so it is an old poem. This is called Baptismal Sheets. Your suicide took me also. The earth, an unwilling witness, filled with wine and fire, spilled her blood onto the funeral. It was your crumbling hand and empty mouth that led me to the edge of that charred pool, where, like a child, I entered crying. I lay in your grave like a stone beneath black water. When I rose, scrubbing soot from my tongue, all memory stilled. Only the ash dripping onto the surface remembers where your face once turned to stone under a white sheet. End poem.
You say this wasn't on topic, but this really feels like it's on topic. I think oftentimes suicide is a lot like a suicide bomber. The people that are closest to the person who does the action are often the ones that are hurt the most. They're almost in a way taken out with that loved one. And I feel like that's really expressed in that second stanza. I keep putting my hands over my face because I'm just like in awe and I need like these seconds to gather me. So if I'm sounding funny, it's because I keep covering my face. I'm sorry, guys. But that second stanza, it was your crumbling hands and empty mouth that led me to the edge of that charred pool where like a child I entered crying. I've always loved singing, but you see those children that are fearful of the unknown, even if they can see the bottom, it's distorted and it's terrifying. And there's always the thought of who's going to catch me now? What happens if? And so this poem to me has a deep, deep loss. It shows the stability in your framework, the cornerstones of your foundation that were blown away with the death of this person, with the realization that they aren't coming back. And in many ways, when that happens, we're buried with these people. Pieces of us are buried with these people. And so in this, there is that lament, the trying to reconcile of who you were and what has been lost. And it kind of leaves us with bated breath. We're confronted with this death, with this finality. And yet it does not give us the answer of where we go next. And that is so very, very real how it feels, be it and I would say more often with an unexpected death, but with any death, we often have to figure out where we go from here. And often we don't have the answer. We just kind of fumble around in the dark until something happens and we stop hitting walls. It's just a stunning piece, Mika, and yet it is so full of pain and sadness. Thank you for sharing this, truly. And Mark, what did you think?
That was, I'm going to say that was such a wonderful comment, Victoria. It's just beautiful. You know, you're talking about the pain and the condition and the feeling involved. And, you know, in terms of what we're talking about tonight, that's really there too. And this poem brings us in, you know, to the heart of the whole prompt. And it's about the, you know, this poem's about the people who stay behind to me after somebody passes away. You know, what is the feeling? What's the emotion? What's the pain? Because there's just a lot, you know, in most situations where somebody passes, and the thoughts of those behind kind of linked, I lay in your grave, like almost sharing the condition of what's happened, and the face of a loved one turned away, buried under a sheet. It just connects us all with that condition very wonderfully and just very beautifully. It's a lovely poem.
That was a beautiful comment, Mark. Thank you. And I do agree. It really does connect. This poem does connect the idea of those left behind, because in many ways, Lady Di is exactly that, a reminder of people being gone and us wanting them to still be here, and yet they are not. Just really beautiful comment, Mark. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, as always, I just think this is absolutely powerful. Mika has such a way with wording, and it's raw, it's heartfelt. All the way through, it's a beautiful write. I have to say, Your Suicide Took Me also, you know, immediately just that idea that when somebody dies and it's sudden and it's tragic and it just a piece of ourselves feels like it dies also. And but what I one particular part I like about this is when it says, when I rose, scrubbing soot from my tongue, all memories still, only ash dripping onto the surface remembers. It's that kind of idea that eventually, you know, we spend that time period grieving, and each person grieves for their amount of time in their way. But then eventually we have to rise up. We have to face life. We have to face the responsibilities of life. And so the memories just aren't constant, but when they're there, they're that burden of dripping ash, that stone beneath the white sheet, that outline. It's like the whole idea of the outline of somebody that clings to our memories. Yeah, and just a powerful emotive write and very well done.
Yes. Thank you, Pam. That's so true. And the original contest that I wrote it for was about baptism. And the only baptism that I could really think of is just the baptism of going through something like that and coming out the other side. You're so right, rising and coming back to responsibilities and letting just that outline remain. Well, that's exactly what I meant to evoke. Thank you.
That was beautiful comment, Pam. That was a beautiful comment. And that was an amazing poem, Mika. So thank you. All right. So shall we move on to Rob?
Yes, I have Rob's poem posted.
Perfect.
And let me see.
I'll go ahead and give, well.
Do you want me to read it?
Mark, would you? Yeah, you can read it. Yeah, would you read it?
Yeah, because Mark was going to read the next one, so I'll take it. I'll just steal it. Lives and Afterlives. Rip Derek Mahone. 1. In the pocket of the outside crusader screams in diluted darkness, crawling on blood-flooded knees from prison cell dead-end crayons, crossing deep-graved cave ravines, curtained by smoke and steamed mirror terrors. Light burnt out under collapsed night, bound in the noose of lingering rope, tightly tied to faded flashlight demise. Stretched synthetic mummified fabric, torn and unraveled into threaded anchors, leak cold salt water into a punctured spirit. Torch batteries burnt fatally flat, the leathered limb matchstick ember whispers slow fatigued flatline breaths. Bed of rock extended beyond, obstacle field crawling length where mirrors faded into millennia. Than a dandelion cocoon, a breeze sweeps through a hairline crack, roaring life into the cavity tomb. Lifted from the empty lung, crushing stranglehold and inflated, floating onto the clouds of feathered light, crippled by fear of homeless children, a second breath bounced from ropes into seasoned empress strength. Jaws of death slumbers hopeless, dozed by an anesthetic bite, fighting to escape the narrowing gates. Unscathed and mightier, she flees from the enclosing fallen walls, the emblem stories unbound to sandfall. End poem. Mark, would you start us off on comments?
Well, just amazing. And this is the type of poem. It's like some poets, like, well, John Asbury, for example, you read his poetry, and each time you read it, you're getting deeper and deeper into it. You get strong enjoyment and immersion in the poem the first read, but you can go deeper and deeper. And Rob's exactly like that, and equal, you know, just so powerful. It's great how he kind of has all this knowledge and perspective and imagery and bring it to bear on any subject that arises and produces really beautiful poems that you can kind of read and reread your whole life, really. That's the way they've always struck me, and see more and get into it. And this one is, you know, to me, on the first read, a meditation on the human condition, and just kind of very loving and intense and very vivid, and the incredible imagery of dying and things descending into death. It's incredible, the imagery, you know, the screams in diluted darkness, light burnt out under collapsing night, bound in the noose of lingering rope, tightly tied to faded flashlight's demise. I mean, that's lovely, and it's ironic. You know, our death, you know, we're like part of entropy. We're part of batteries that, you know, we decay and run out, our lives, our spirits, and, you know, the battery in the flashlight does, and it's all, in a way, part of what the universe is, where we live. And it's so beautifully stated, and so it's just very great poetry. Lovely poem.
That was a great comment, Mark. Thank you. I fell in love with Rob's work a while ago. I still remember his first piece. I don't remember the name, but I remember reading it and really this satire at life and society, because it spoke about children that were begging for scraps while the adults went poor and an orphanage closed. And yet in the newspaper, it was, you know, buy two orphans, get one free, which possibly hinted at child abuse. And he's always got just this really phenomenal way of writing that captures you. The first vignette really feels like the burial, the death, the escape from prison, if you will. And in this case, it seems almost like at their own hands. Life, too much. And so with scribbled dead-end crayons, they left a note for someone else to find because their curtain was drawing and the mirror held terrors. And so with the lingering rope and the fading flashlight, they ended their story. They met their curtain call. They hit rock bottom. And their memory fades into a millennia. But the second one almost offers hope. I would argue that it's towing the idea of resurrection with the idea that lifted from the empty lung, a breeze sweeps through the hairline crack, pouring life into the cavity tomb. Someone is being brought back, even if it's not necessarily their body, they are being brought back and they are being lifted, floating into the clouds of feathered flight. To me, that's almost like an ascension. No longer is this person bound to their mortal coils, but they now have wings to fly. But there's always fear, and even if you are given your freedom, perhaps you will fly too close to the sun, or perhaps those who are fearful will drag you down. And so the jaws of death slumber, hopeless to regain this person that they have lost, and yet dreaming of it. Thankfully, this poem seems to have an almost happy ending as she flies away. She bounces back. She finds her ground and is able to move forward because not everybody is able to. But we're reminded that this is perhaps not what everybody gets. Perhaps some people do come back from the dead better than before, and they fall into the mists and more, and that is why we have the stories that we have today. But if that's the case, then why don't we have any modern day ones? What have we lost? Drowned in the sands of time, that we can't replicate this anymore. It's a questioning almost of faith and beliefs and an understanding of what we may or may not even be capable of simply because we have stuck onto the idea of I can't. It's, as usual, just stunning. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh my goodness, you've all had just such wonderful comments. I have to say, this is just stunning. It's amazing how well it fits with tonight's topic. And I like how it's got the whole representation of someone who's struggling through life, struggling through these kind of dark times, and you know, coming towards that light. Let's see, oh my gosh, some powerful imagery here. A voice in the pocket of the outside crusader screams in diluted darkness, crawling on blood, flooding knees. I like outside crusader as the idea of someone who sees what is happening and wants so badly to stop it and is struggling to stop it. I also like the torch batteries burned fatally flat, the leather glim matchstick ember whispers slow fatigue, flatline breath. Now to me, that the whole idea of the light that's dimming is that sense of almost feeling like hope is being lost, and yet it's still there. It's still that little bit of light, and the whole British or whatever. I know he's not British, but the fact that they use torch in other countries for flashlight always throws me off. Side note there. And he's got beautiful and powerful writing. And I do like Jaws of Death, Slumbers, Hopeless, Dozed Off by Anesthetic Bite, Fighting to Escape the Narrowing Gate. I like that all of a sudden comes something that is hopeless, something that has been defeated. Just an excellent write and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam.
Oh, okay.
I think that Victoria might be having technical difficulties. Victoria, are you still
there? I'm having life difficulties, guys. I'm sitting over here, and I didn't come back on mute when I dropped, and so as soon as I'm like, okay, I need to take off mute now. So then I like muted myself to start talking, and I'm just, guys, I need a nap. That was
Amen.
An amazing comment, Pam. and Mika, what did you think of it?
Oh, well, I loved all your guys' comments, especially you, Pam. That was a really incredible comment. I guess what I would have to say is I kind of took it on first read as kind of an antithesis to Pam's poem earlier. You know, Pam, your poem was really talking about bearing the weight that you're expected to bear, but wondering what it's like to engage in life without that weight. And in Rob's poem, kind of reading like the kind of weightlessness and anxiety that can come from living without any purpose, and then the anchoring and the responsibility that gives your life purpose coming in the end, and the hope that can cause the impetus that can throw you from kind of allowing yourself to drown into finding a higher reason to run towards progress, to run away from the narrowing gates to actually succeed in what you're doing. Especially when he says, crippled by fear of homeless children, a second breath bounced from ropes into seasoned empress strength. I feel like he's talking about mama bear strength there. I mean, it's like when you have a reason beyond yourself to live, you can fight so much harder. You can do so much more. It's like the adrenaline that floods you when you're in a fight. If you have a purpose. So in the beginning, it's like kind of like a laying down of life, like it has no meaning. And in the second section, he found a purpose.
That was an amazing comment. And I love that in your interpretation of it, that you have this second breath at life, because so often, almost like the semicolon, you know, so many people come to that brink and yet for whatever reason, their story continues on. Perhaps they chose for it to continue on. Perhaps there was a fluke. But they get to embrace that new opportunity. So I absolutely love that interpretation. Thank you, Mika. And Mark, what did you think?
Actually, I gave a comment, I guess, on this already.
Oh, I'm just... I'm just losing my mind tonight, guys. All right. In that case, Mark, would you like to finish us off the show with your second poem?
Is it on the board? There, I have it in front of me. Can people see it? Or?
oh, let me check. I think Mika's getting it posted.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah. All right. So, all righty. The discarded. Do you want me to go ahead? What would you like?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't get it posted yet. Just one second.
I see it on the billboard. Oh, all right, cool.
Yeah,
right.
I got it. We're good.
All righty, I'll go ahead. So if you don't mind, I'll introduce it for a minute. 20 in, I used to live in New York City, and there was, you know, a while back, a big club scene, which is obviously closed down now. but even with the virus, but late night clubs. And if you wandered around New York, certain parts of New York, very late at night, you saw some strange magic. I mean, it really was, you know, like the general theme of this show. You saw all the clubs closing, people circulating in weird costumes, weird behavior. In a way, it was kind of magical. And then they ended up closing the city down quite a bit. But that whole late night club scene in New York City is, and this poem is actually inspired. It's in the AM, but there's a link to the poem that it's inspired by another one in AP by Theo, actually, Theo Onick, who is on the show tonight. I read this poem of hers, and I was kind of mesmerized by it. You know, it's a short poem. I guess we can't read it too tonight, too, which is too bad because it's lovely. But it's just in the AN. So the character's name. So this is a kind of a narrative extracted. She presents this kind of powerful image that's extraordinarily beautiful in that poem, and it includes two characters talking to each other, Trollio and Henriette. And I kind of like those names. And so I took her imagery and I spun it into kind of a little story here about walking around New York late at night among the club scene, all the people emptying out, because the poem kind of brought back that whole kind of, in a way, it was a magical situation. New York was different a while back. And that her poem kind of brought that all back. And so I ended up kind of reading it and kind of sitting down and writing this. And I used her two characters, Trollio and Henriette. I'll go ahead and read it then. It's called Discarded Hero. Trollio is clever and knows it, was trolling hyperspace on cell phone while slowly walking on, texting Henriette with ambivalent regret. Stoned on whatever, depressively strolling through Bushwick, past low rents, the beaten tenements, shuttered laundromats, 24-hour delis, whose dumpsters swarmed with rats, hoping to discover discarded heroes, pickle relish, and mustard slathered over. Daily miracles recreated, which the rats appreciated. Past closed lifeless pubs, late night closing clubs. When near a trolley track, four mannequins appeared. Three gothics in dull black, pale faces, each with beard. Looking each the same, and a rainbow flame. Rotating hard their arms, like fighting off the swarms of spectral predators, they danced into the doors of a halting cab. It rolled off, left a drab emptiness in air. Henry, I am feeling like a walking zero, like there's nothing here. A discarded hero, lifeless with no relish. The energy I've mustered, now draining and congealing, waiting for a verminous, proximate, dull terminus. There is nothing here. The hardest thing to bear is the rainbow flame never had a name. End of poem.
Oh, this is such a fun write, Mark. I think what I really like is how you kind of start with this idea of discarded heroes and not like actual people is how I took it. The more like if you have a starving rat, they're going to think that people's discarded food is a hero, that somehow it's a miracle that people threw this bread, meat, cheese, what have you, in the dumpster for them to feast upon. And so along with these discarded heroes, we have this pickle relish and the mustard and just all of these little miracles. And yet Trollio is kind of trolling along, texting Henrietta. He's confronted by these almost out of place people. And I love that they're described as mannequins because they're pale and they're wearing black and it can look very much like a mannequin. And yet they have that individuality. They have that understanding of who they are against what other people believe and want and think. And so they fight off this idea, this mundanity that so much of this life has given away to and decayed to. And so finally he gets there. He leaves this area with these people, Henrietta O'Call. And yet in that call, he seems to ignore the people that are making their way, the people that are fighting against the mundane, against the willing decay of life and the hopelessness, if you will, better dead than hopeless almost. And yet that ending stands out. The hardest thing to bear is the rainbow flame never had a name. It can read as regret for not getting to better know these people. It can lead or read as an idea that they wish that perhaps he was more like them and understood them and knew how to reconnect with them so he could continue to grow in that way. But instead, he is more like the discarded hero. He walked away from change because the decay and the hopelessness is known, and what it's what's comfortable, even if it means being a discarded hero with no relish and not even having any energy to be mustered. It's interesting. It's really fun. And to me, it kind of just tells a tale that leads you along and just makes you appreciate possibly the missed opportunities and think about how we will handle the next one. It's really, really well done. Thank you for sharing this, Mark.
Thanks.
Of course. And Pam, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this. I like that it's a modern tale. It kind of, for some reason, has a vibe of something like the musical Rent, where, you know, you've got these individuals that struggle, and they struggle with the idea of, you know, identity, who we are, in the choices we make, as far as, you know, like this guy being a troll, and then all of a sudden kind of having this overwhelming sense of guilt. And the conversational tone that it takes, and it's almost a very, it also has kind of an element of confessional poetry, even though it's not told necessarily. It's a made-up story, you know, but it's got that idea of, you know, somebody saying, you know, hey, these are the things I've been through, these are the choices I've made, and this is the way I'm feeling, and I am so overwhelmed by these moments of regret. Honestly, this poem, I could so see it being made into something bigger. You know, having, you know, it could be, honestly, you could take characters like this and make it into a book. That's how absolutely fascinating these kind of characters are and relatable to, because we all want to read about flawed characters, not the perfect ones. So just an excellent write here, Mark. Very well done.
Thanks, Pam. It's actually interesting. I told Theo that I'd like to make a series out of this and do more with Trollio and Henriette. So it's interesting you said that. Thanks a lot for the comment.
Fantastic comment, Pam. And Mika, finally, what did you think?
Oh, I really like this, Mark. I think, you know, it's cool because you have these characters. You know, Pam was saying that it's like a very modern poem. I really agree with that. But it's weird because you've taken the sort of fable and made it into a gritty modern version. But I feel like this has a very, like a fable tone to it. But it's put in such a gritty way, but it still has those bits of philosophy that kind of give it that sense of a parable
like when you talk about dumpster swarming with rats hoping to discover discarded heroes, pickle relish and mustard slathered over. And then a couple stanzas later you say, I am feeling like a walking zero, like there's nothing here, a discarded hero, lifeless with no relish, the energy I've mustered now draining and congealing. That is really cool and very, very clever as well. I really like that because it's not necessarily humorous, even though the use of relish and mustard almost lends itself to that. It's more of just a grittiness that pervades your palm and builds such a dark, gloomy atmosphere. I really liked it.
Wow, amazing comment. Thanks, Mika.
Fantastic comment, Mika. All right, so that is the end of the show tonight. We still have 13 minutes, but we're not going to scrounge. It's been a long day for me, and I'm going to fall asleep. That being said, I do want to let everybody know that we already do have next week Strange Magic After Midnight contest that is up. We're going to be featuring the artwork by Bella Mayer by Mall. She's got some really cool artwork. One of them is actually called Midnight Dreary, and of course, it includes the Raven's Skulls. She does some really beautiful drawings. Her colors are just outstanding, and the way in which she shows her artwork is almost as if it's coming off the page at you. It's very dimensional. And so definitely check out that contest. I unfortunately don't right now have the capability to add pictures into my contest, so maybe I will beg Mika and or Pam to do that for me and just have them pick a few of their favorites. But that will be next week's show, and it is available for people to start entering if they are interested. So be sure to check that contest out and that artist out. She is phenomenal. We have this Sunday, I'm going to be doing Hearts of L&P. We're going to be looking at Love, Loss, and Grief. So if you think you've got a poem, that would be awesome for that. That topic's going to be up soon. And Pam, what do you have going on?
Well, tomorrow night, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, which I guess is technically Friday, I have Into the Darkness, and I have a couple of picture prompts. The contests are closed, but the topic board is up, and check out the artwork and, you know, see if you got a pre-write or you want to whip up something new that's into the realm of darkness and inspired by the pictures. So that's what I got.
I love it. All right. Well, with that, I'm going to say thank you to everyone who called in. Mark and Pam, you guys are just stunning. Thank you to all the poets who wrote in for our contest. It was definitely a tricky prompt, but you guys just knocked it out of the park. The works were just stunning. And as well for Rob for sending us an extra piece, Mika for bringing hers and being the most amazing co-host ever. And then, of course, for Mark giving us an extra piece to end the night with because it was perfect. I love and appreciate all you guys, and I hope the rest of your week is just fantastic.
You too, Victoria. Great show.
Yeah, great show, lovely. Mika. Good night, guys.
Good night.